As Humphreys rode down to Cellini's bottommost level, he thought, Fuchs is an academic, the kind who's never had two pennies in his hands at the same time. Let him go out to the belt. Let him see how much money he can make and all the things that money can buy. And while he's doing it, I'll be here at Amanda's side. By the time he reached his palatial home, Humphreys was almost happy.
Data Bank, the asteroid belt. Millions of chunks of rock and metal float silently, endlessly, through the deep emptiness of interplanetary space. The largest of them, Ceres, is barely 1,000 kilometers wide. Most of them are much smaller, ranging from irregular chunks a few kilometers long down to the size of pebbles. They contain more metals and minerals, more natural resources than the entire Earth can provide. They are the Bonanza, the El Dorado, the Comstock Lode, the gold and silver and iron and everything else mines of the 21st century. There are hundreds of millions of billions of tons of high-grade ores in the asteroids. They hold enough real wealth to make each man, woman, and child of the entire human race into a millionaire, and then some. The first asteroid was discovered shortly after midnight on January 1, 1801, by a Sicilian monk who happened to be an astronomer. While others were celebrating the new century, Giuseppe Piazzi was naming the tiny point of light he saw in his telescope Ceres, after the pagan goddess of Sicily. Perhaps an unusual attitude for a pious monk, but Piazzi was a Sicilian, after all. By the advent of the 21st century, more than 15,000 asteroids had been discovered by Earth-bound astronomers. As the human race began to expand its habitat to the Moon and to explore Mars, millions more were found. Technically, they are planetoids, little planets, chunks of rock and metal floating in the dark void of space, leftovers from the creation of the sun and planets some 4.5 billion years ago. Piazzi correctly referred to them as planetoids, but in 1802, William Herschel, who had earlier discovered the giant planet Uranus, called them asteroids, because in the telescope their pinpoints of light looked like stars rather than the disks of planets. Piazzi was correct, but Herschel was far more famous and influential. We call them asteroids to this day. Several hundred of the asteroids are in orbits that near the Earth, but by far most of them circle around the Sun in a broad swath in deep space between the orbits of Mars and giant Jupiter. This asteroid belt is centered more than 600 million kilometers from Earth, 4 times farther from the Sun than our home world. Although this region is called the asteroid belt, the asteroids are not strewn so thickly that they represent a hazard to space navigation. Far from it, the so-called belt is a region of vast emptiness, dark and lonely, and very far from human civilization. Until the invention of the Duncan fusion drive, the asteroid belt was too far from the Earth-Moon system to be of economic value. Once fusion propulsion became practical, however, the belt became the region where prospectors and miners could make fortunes for themselves or die in the effort. Many of them died. More than a few were killed. 3 years later. I said it would be simple, Lars Fuchs repeated. I did not say it would be easy. George Ambrose, Big George to everyone who knew him, scratched absently at his thick red beard as he gazed thoughtfully out through the window of Star Power One's bridge toward the immense, looming, dark bulk of the asteroid Ceres. I didn't come out here to get involved in daft schemes, Lars, he said. His voice was surprisingly high and sweet for such a shaggy mastodon of a man. For a long moment, the only sound in the compartment was the eternal hum of electrical equipment. Then Fuchs pushed between the two pilots' seats to drift toward Big George. Stopping himself with a touch of his hand against the metal overhead, he said in an urgent whisper,
We can do it, given time and resources. It's fucking insane, George muttered,
but he kept staring out at the asteroid's rock-strewn, pockmarked surface. They made an odd pair, the big, bulky Aussie with his shaggy, brick-red mane and beard hovering weightlessly beside the dark, intense, thick-set Fuchs. 3 years in the belt had changed Fuchs somewhat. He was still burly, barrel-chested, but he had let his chestnut-brown hair grow almost to his collar, and the earring he wore was now a polished chip of asteroidal copper. A slim bracelet of copper circled his left wrist. Yet in their individual ways, both men looked powerful, determined, even dangerous.
"Living inside Ceres is bad for our health," Fuchs said.
George countered,
"Plenty of radiation protection from the rock."
"It's the microgravity," Fuchs said earnestly. "It's not good for us, physically."
"I like it, but the bones become so brittle. Dr. Cardenas says the rate of fractures is rising steeply. You've seen that yourself, haven't you?"
"Maybe," George half admitted.
Then he grinned.
"But the sex is fucking fantastic."
Fuchs scowled at the bigger man.
"Be serious, George."
Without taking his eyes off Ceres's battered face, George said,
"Okay, you're right, I know it. But building a bloody O'Neill habitat..."
"It doesn't have to be that big. Not like the L5 habitats around Earth. Just big enough to house the few hundred people here in Ceres, at first."
George shook his shaggy head.
"You know how big a job you're talking about. Just the life support equipment alone would cost a mint, and then some."
"No, no. That's the beauty of my scheme," Fuchs said with a nervous laugh. "We simply purchase spacecraft and put them together. They become the habitat. And they already have all the life support equipment and radiation shielding built into them. We won't need their propulsion units at all, so the price will be much lower than you think."
"Then you want to spend the whole fucking kludge to Earth normal G?"
"Lunar normal," Fuchs answered. 1/6 G is good enough. Dr. Cardenas agrees."
George scratched at his thick, unkempt beard.
"I don't know, Lars. We've been living inside the rock, okay? Why go to all this trouble and expense?"
"Because we have to," Fuchs insisted. "Living in microgravity is dangerous to our health. We must build a better habitat for ourselves."
George looked unconvinced, but he muttered,
"Lunar G, you say?
1/6 normal Earth gravity, no more than that."
"How much will it cost?"
Fuchs blinked once.
"We can buy the slipped-down spacecraft from Astro Corporation. Pancho is offering a very good price."
"How much?"
"The preliminary figures work out..."
Fuchs hesitated, took a breath, then said,
"We can do it if all the prospectors and miners put in 10% of their income."
George grunted.
"A tithe, huh?"
10% isn't much. A lot of us rock rats don't make any income at all, some years."
"I know," said Fuchs.
"I factored that into the cost estimate. Of course, we'll have to pay off the spacecraft over 20 or 30-year leases, like a mortgage on a house, Earthside."
"So you want everybody here in Ceres to take on a 20-year debt?"
"We can pay it off sooner, perhaps. A few really big strikes could pay for the entire project all by themselves."
"Yeah, sure."
With burning intensity, Fuchs asked,
"Will you do it? If you agree, most of the other prospectors will, too."
"Why don't you get one of the corporations to do it?"
George asked. "Astro or Humphreys?" He stopped when he saw the look on Fuchs's face.
"Not Humphreys," Fuchs growled. "Never him or his company. Never."
"Okay. Astro, then."
Fuchs's scowl shifted into a troubled frown.
"I've spoken to Pancho about it.
The Astro board would not vote for it. They will sell slipped-down spacecraft to us, but they won't commit to building the habitat. They don't see a profit from it." George grunted.
"What do they care if we snap our bones?"
"But you care," Fuchs said eagerly. "It's our problem, George. We have to solve it, and we can, if you will help."
Running a beefy hand through his thick mop of red hair, Big George said, "You're going to need a techie team to do this integration job. There's more to putting this habitat of yours together than just connecting Tinker Toys, you know. You'll need a flock of geek boys."
"That's already in the cost estimate," Fuchs replied.
George huffed a mighty sigh, then said,
"All right, Lars, I'm in. I guess it would be pretty good to have a base out here in the belt with some decent gravity to it."
Fuchs smiled.
"You can always have sex aboard your own ship."
George grinned back at him.
"Believe it, mate. Believe it."
Fuchs went with George to the ship's main airlock and helped the bigger man get back into his hard-shell spacesuit.
"They're testing lightweight suits back at Selene, you know.
he said as he slid into the rigid